What kind of programs does this school have? How are the test scores? How many kids do a classroom? Homes.com knows these are all things you ask when you're home shopping as a parent. That's why each listing on Homes.com includes extensive reports on local schools, including photos, parent reviews, test scores, student-teacher ratio, school rankings, and more. The information is from multiple trusted sources and curated by Homes.com's dedicated in-house research team. It's all so you can make the right decision for your family. Homes.com. We've done your homework.
This season, a new hot deal has arrived at Metro. $25 a line for 4 lines with all the data you need and 4 free Samsung Galaxy A15 5G phones. Getting Metro's best deals is easy. No ID required, no activation fees. Get a new number or keep your own. It's up to you. That's 4 lines for $25 a line plus 4 free phones. Visit a store or go online today. Only at Metro by T-Mobile.
When you join Metro Plus Tax, for a limited time and subject to change, max one offer per account.
This season, let your shoes do the talking. Designer Shoe Warehouse is packed with fresh styles that speak to your whole vibe without saying a word. From cool sneakers that look good with everything to easy sandals you'll want to wear on repeat, DSW has you covered. Find a shoe for every you from the brands you love, like Birkenstock, Nike, Adidas, New Balance, and more. Head to your DSW store or visit DSW.com today.
When we talk about funding our schools, the attention is usually focused on elementary and high schools, and there are strong pushes for early childhood education too. But advocates say higher education, colleges and universities, are worth at least an equal share of the spotlight. This Easter weekend, we look at why and how. Hello, I'm political editor Craig Dullimore, and this is At Issue. Each year, the Center for Tax and Budget Accountability holds a symposium on major budget issues. I've had the pleasure of moderating the panel discussions at several of those gatherings. This year's theme was higher education funding, and this weekend, we'll let you hear some of that discussion. Ralph Martieri is director of the CTBA, and he kicked things off with data illustrating why higher education funding should be top of mind, especially now.
This is a very appropriate time to be looking at higher ed and its capacity. Just to put it in the national context for a second, we've never had a presidential administration do a full frontal assault, not just on the funding universities could have available to them, but on what they can teach, who they can hire, who they could admit, the processes they use. That is not an appropriate role for a president in a democratic society. Universities, academia, have to be free to pursue what they believe are in the interests of their students and research, free of political interference of any kind. So focusing on higher ed certainly makes a big difference today when higher ed is very much under assault. But it also has made sense for a long time from just a purely economic point of view. I'm sharing just a little bit of the data on why a college degree is so important in the modern economy. Go back to 1979. In that year, someone with a bachelor's degree earned 38% more than a high school grad. By 2020, that gap had jumped up to 85% more. 85% more. You really have to learn to earn in the modern economy. No question. But making an additional investment in higher ed isn't just some like public funding thing that doesn't generate a return on investment. It generates an incredibly high return on investment. We know, in fact, that for every dollar invested into public institutions of higher learning, our state economy gets a benefit of $2.28 through the multiplier effect. because the investment in the university, its staff, its faculty, its other workers becomes their income. They go out and spend it in the local economy, et cetera. This is a powerful multiplier. And if you don't believe that, go to communities like Macomb, Illinois, where the university is crucial to the economic viability of that entire region. In fact, every regional university is crucial to the economic viability of the area in which it is situated. We also know, it wouldn't be the Center for Tax and Budget Accountability if I didn't talk about this, that the state benefits fiscally by educating its folks. In fact, every dollar invested in higher education generates $4.50 in increased tax revenue and or reduced social costs that the state no longer has to fund. The ROIs here are clear. But wait, of course, there's more. Georgetown University recently released a study that showed by 2031, not that far away, 6 years, 72% of every new job offering, 72% of them, will require a BA or more. But 85% of the new jobs in that year that are high paying will require a BA or more. Will there still be jobs for high school grads? Yeah, they just won't pay enough to support a family, period. That's where we are headed.
The question is, can we as families and as a state pay the toll? Ralph Martiri got into that with more data. You've probably figured out Ralph is a data guy.
In Illinois, the average cost of attending a public university 1 year will take 17% of the median income of your typical white family, 30% of the median income of your typical black family, 20% of your typical income, median income of your typical Latinx family. That's a significant differential, and it's had consequences. What we know today is 55.7% of all adults in our state who are white have a BA or higher, but only 34.6% of the black adults have a BA or higher, while only 27.7% of the Latino adults have a BA or higher. Connect dots. Education matters more than ever to being competitive in the modern economy. The state of Illinois, despite all this evidence, has been disinvesting significantly in higher ed support for 25 years. This disinvestment has not only been particularly difficult for low-income families generally, but it has singled out Black and Latinx families for particular disadvantage, making it far more unaffordable on average for their families than for white families. And then we see this major differentials in college credentials by race. I'm thinking state policy had something to do with that. And it's a fixable problem.
Which brings us to Senate Bill 13, the Adequate and Equitable Public University Funding Act. It's a formula for funding higher ed institutions by comparing the cost of an adequate education for every student with what the schools are currently getting and then filling the gap. Elaine Gaberick, the CTBA's Director of Policy Analysis, handled that part of the presentation.
And the adequacy gap is a figure that we could view as the dollar amount that an institution is underfunded. And the formula works by taking this adequacy gap and prioritizing universities that are the furthest away from their adequacy targets, meaning they have the largest adequacy gaps, and pushing funds towards them first, meaning that they get a larger portion of the share of new funds based on the size of their adequacy gap. So SB 13 calls for $135 million additional dollars each year above prior appropriations that would go through the formula in this way. And this is very helpful because it, takes the money and puts it to the universities that need it the most.
Now, if that sounds reasonable to you, well, empirically it is. But when you're dealing with state budgets, making sense isn't enough. The dollars have to be there. That's where our panel came in. Joining us in Roosevelt University's elegant Gans Hall Auditorium were an education advocate, a leading state lawmaker, and a top state education official. And you're going to hear some of their discussion. You're listening to WBBM News Radio's At Issue. I'm Craig Delamore, and this is a discussion of higher education funding, paying for state colleges and universities. It was the focus of the annual symposium of the Center for Tax and Budget Accountability. I moderated the policy discussion. First up was Lisa Castillo Richmond. She's the director of the Partnership for College Completion, an advocacy group.
We were able to see very starkly, very early, that we were a state that through a series of choices and also probably wanting to do other amazing things, right? So unintentional neglect as well. We had really started to leave our colleges and universities, our public institutions behind. We were underfunding them to the tune of hundreds of millions of dollars a year, and this was having very tangible impacts on students. Our first order of business as an organization was to just tour around the state and talk to people engaged in higher education at the local level, at the state level, in different communities across the state, K-12 leaders who were sending their students to college. And when we issued our first report in 2017, we called it unequal opportunity because we saw, you know, higher ed finance as one key piece of this. Resources were being distributed by a political process to our public universities. You know, comparatively, we did have a funding formula for our community colleges. We have two funding formulas, but that is in a different place, but a somewhat similar process of our state had continued to decline its investment in our institutions and in our state need-based aid program, the MAP grant, which gives students their leg up into these institutions. And as a first-generation college student who grew up in the northern part of this state, you know, it really seemed very stark to me. And so we started talking to students. We started, you know, building an understanding of what kind of adequacy or what kind of advocacy would be needed to do this, and started looking at other states. For examples, you know, what kinds of funding formulas existed in other states? Why was Illinois among the only states that didn't have a funding formula? And we really saw that, you know, it was happening under the nose of many of our state leaders. You know, we had a lot of things that we wanted to do in Illinois. We were doing them. We had, at that point in time, we were in a years-long process to advance a funding formula for K-12 that was innovative, best in the nation, and has shifted the dialogue in K-12 quite significantly. And we immediately saw that there was a place for higher education to have a similar set of conversations that would take us forward. And I think you've seen that happening.
In fact, there's now legislation moving through the state capitol. Suburban State Representative Lisa Hernandez updated us on that. She's the Deputy House Majority Leader, and for the purposes of some later remarks, she is also chair of the Illinois Democratic Party, and she's been working on education issues for some time.
Yes, I came into office back as far as 2006. So I guess I'm one of those legislators who have witnessed sort of the shortcomings that the state has had and had to make some difficult decisions. So coming from a educational setting, so I before I landed with then Lieutenant Governor Pat Quinn, I worked at the District 99 school district, elementary school district. So really, and at the not as a teacher, but at the administrative level. So from the very beginning, really came in with a lens as to what, in particular, that district was not receiving. And at that time, it was just as, you know, just as minimal as after-school programs. There were none. So gang-infested at that time, looking for ways to basically do away with the time, too much time on the hands of some of our students. But really, that was the beginning for me to understand what it means for a student to be successful. As I entered the legislature, from that point, I always remained in the APROPE K to 12, but then later on, really recognized that it's pre-K to all the way to, you know, from what, how they say it, from birth all the way, cradle to career. Soon recognized that, and I jumped into the appropriation higher ed. Yes, I have to admit, very hard decisions at some point where we had to do the cuts at the universities. At that time, it was hard to see, but needed to be done only to try to balance the budget. But as time goes on, you recognize the hardships here that have been created because of some of the decision-making. Here's a chance. This formula, with the experience of the evidence base, you know, we recognize some of what, you know, could be some successes.
If you have health insurance, you might be able to see a personal dietitian for $0 out of pocket. Nourish connects you with a dietitian that fits your needs, covered by your insurance. Nourish accepts hundreds of insurance plans, and 94% of patients pay $0 out of pocket. Meet with your dietitian online and message them anytime through the Nourish app. With hundreds of five-star reviews from real patients, you know you're in good hands. Find your dietitian at usenourish.com. That's usenourish.com.
When you think about businesses that are selling through the roof like Aloe, Allbirds, or Skims, sure, you think about a great product, a cool brand, and brilliant marketing. But an often overlooked secret is actually the businesses behind the business, making selling and for shoppers buying simple. For millions of businesses, that business is Shopify. Nobody does selling better than Shopify, home of the number one checkout on the planet and the not-so-secret secret with Shop Pay that boosts conversions up to 50%, meaning way less carts going abandoned and way more sales going. So if you're into growing your business, your commerce platform better be ready to sell whenever your customers are scrolling or strolling on the web, in your store, in their feed, and everywhere in between. Upgrade your business and get the same checkout experience as business powerhouses like Aloe, Allbirds, and Skims. Sign up for your $1 per month trial period at shopify.com/odysseypodcast, all lowercase. Go to shopify.com/odysseypodcast to upgrade your selling today. shopify.com/odysseypodcast.
Hey, I'm Andy. If you don't know me, it's probably because I'm not famous. But I did start a men's grooming company called Harry's. The idea for Harry's came out of a frustrating experience I had buying razor blades. Most brands were overpriced, overdesigned, and out of touch. At Harry's, our approach is simple. Here's our secret. We make sharp, durable blades and sell them at honest prices for as low as $2 each. We care about quality so much that we do some crazy things, like buy a world-class German blade factory. Obsessing over every detail means we're confident in offering a 100% quality guarantee. Millions of guys have already made the switch to Harry's. So thank you if you're one of them. And if you're not, we hope you give us a try with this special offer. Get a Harry starter set with a 5-blade razor, weighted handle, shave gel, and a travel cover. All for just $3 plus free shipping. Just go to harrys.com and enter code MAN at checkout. That's harrys.com, code MAN. Enjoy!
Next, heard from Ginger Ostro. She's the executive director of the Illinois Board of Higher Education. That's the coordinating body for the state system of colleges and universities. And Director Ostro agrees that it is time for some successes for higher ed.
So in 2020, when I first started the Board of Higher Education, it had been a long time since the state had a strategic plan for higher ed. As everyone pointed out, there had been years of disinvestment. Higher education was not at the forefront of folks' attention. But we realized the real challenges there, particularly during the budget impasse when there was no funding, there was no budget at all for the state, and our higher ed institutions were really, really devastated by that and really hadn't made gotten that funding restored. And that really created challenges, as we've seen in some of the data. And so we brought folks together to say, okay, what is our vision? Where do we want to go as a higher for our higher education system? And we launched a strategic planning process. And yes, in 2020, this was the height of COVID. And so we did it using all virtual means, which was obviously radical at the time. But it really allowed us to reach folks across the state and ask questions about what does higher education mean to you? What are the areas that we should focus on? How can we improve the system to help support the state? Literally 10,000 people answered our survey, thousands more participated in focus groups, and we had an advisory committee. And from that strategic plan, we identified and called the plan a Thriving Illinois, because we recognized how much a strong, equitable higher education system meant to the state's economy. And you saw that in some of Ralph's data as well. And through that strategic plan, we outlined three broad goals. First, to close equity gaps for students who had been left behind. Secondly, to ensure that our higher education system is sustainable. That means both affordable for families and that institutions can afford to continue to provide high levels of services and support for our students so that they can succeed. And third, to support Illinois' economy. Our higher education institutions provide our talent, our workforce to drive the state's economy, but also the innovation that helps us grow and take on new areas and invest in the economy. So with those three goals, we developed a set of strategies.
Those strategies evolved into Senate Bill 13, now before the General Assembly. I asked Lisa Hernandez exactly where is that bill now, at what stage of consideration?
Last year was taking a good look at it, start sort of working out the kinks. You know, I don't foresee this to take this long. I've been involved in some legislation that has taken years in the making, but I think, as Ginger said, the really well thought out introduction of this piece of legislation brings it ahead. So last year, I would say it opened it up to discussion, really trying to recognize like what the legislation is doing.
It's complicated legislation and the stakes are high. So Lisa Castillo Richmond of the Partnership for College Completion says you can expect that reaching full agreement hasn't been easy, and it still isn't.
There are lots of disagreements still in the recommendations that came forth from the commission. As Ginger mentioned, it was 35 people and all with very strong opinions. And so I think what happened with that first version of the bill was, how can we be as faithful to the recommendations as possible, understanding that we're going to have some conversations to hash out some of the details. So over the last 9 months, really, there has been another very large table set where people have come together, and not always in good fun, but I think mostly in really good faith.
So who doesn't want this bill to pass in its present form? Castillo Richmond says it's not that simple. The issues involve money and a bit of politics.
We know this bill has a price tag. You know, you don't cut funding year by year for 20 plus years. And even despite recent increases in higher ed, there have been laudable, very significant increases in recent years from recent legislatures and the governor's office into higher education, both in terms of appropriations and the MAP grant. But you can't dig out of a 22-3-year hole in 4 or 5 years. And so this does require a real commitment to both shifting the approach of how we distribute appropriations, but also really infusing new revenues or reinfusing needed revenues into the system. So I'm very hopeful, and the clock is ticking.
And she says at times like this, when federal funds may dwindle and the times are tight anyway, tough and important decisions will be made.
It costs $1.7 billion in new dollars to be reinvested in our public universities. Right now, what that looks like, and I think that was on one of the slides, we're projecting a $135 million increased investment per year in our public universities. So I think the cost of that, right, we're in a tight budget year, you know, money doesn't grow on trees, we're not, you know, contemplating a new source of revenue, you know, that's attached to this necessarily. So I think that is one of the big challenges. I think also there's a lot of, you know, the status quo is a very powerful actor, right? And I think one of the things that changes if this bill is passed or when this bill is passed is that state funds will flow through the Illinois Board of Higher Education, similar to what it does in the Illinois State Board of Education for K-12 schools, similar to how it flows right now through the Illinois Community College Board with their formulas to our 48 community colleges across the state. So instead of going directly from state appropriations from the legislature to the institutions, it will now flow through IBHE, which would administer the formula and then distribute based on the formula. And so I think those institutions that have stronger political power and are gaining and winning under the status quo are resistant to this. But I will say that we have, you know, almost all, 99% of the institutions that are supportive of this.
Lawmaker Lisa Hernandez agrees with advocate Lisa Castillo-Richmond. Politics are playing a role here. After all, some of the provisions of the bill are an acknowledgement about racial disparities in the current funding formulas, and the principle of the entire redistribution of funds is equity among the institutions. So Hernandez, who is also the state Democratic Party leader, says there are arguments in committee over diversity and equity, things the Trump administration wants discounted.
I think that the threats are there, but we remain, we have to. I mean, not only in education, but just across the board, the attacks on sort of all across, you know, areas of government, you see that. So we have to continue moving the needle as we can. We have to, don't see us sitting around, but rather moving forward with our legislation. I mean, we're going to do a budget. We hear the threats of maybe Medicaid not coming through. We're going to have to, just remain the course in terms of putting a budget together and continue doing, the fight goes on at the federal level. And in many ways, those efforts may come to a point where we can continue our work, but that's what I mean. We have to focus on moving forward as if though they won't come to play. If they do come to play, then that is when we have to take a look and maybe even perhaps return to see what's the next steps we're going to have to take. But for now, what I would say is the focus is to continue moving forward, continue to fight the fight, and there's just no other way.
I'll say that higher education is a critical pillar of democracy. It is there is no proxy for accessible, affordable colleges and universities, a diverse ecosystem of 2- and 4-year public and private nonprofit institutions in our state that can support and educate our students. There is the 4.5 plus times return on investment that the state gets, but beyond that, it's about individual well-being. It's about families coming to and staying in this state. It's about all of those things. And I think what's happening now, it's an extremely challenging time. I mean, it's a dark time for higher education. Higher ed is being attacked financially, as you pointed out. It's being attacked. Students are being attacked. Programs, faculty, academic freedom, course content, that was mentioned earlier. If this was important for our state when we first put this data together years ago, and critically important when we passed the bill that created the commission in the spring of 2021, it is 10, 20 times more important for our state to shore up our higher education institutions today in 2025 than it was then.
Another looming issue could revolve around what will undoubtedly be how tight the state budget must be to deal with a big deficit and competing worthy interests. Could proponents of early childhood education, for example, find themselves fighting with higher education advocates over shrinking pieces of the fiscal pie? Lisa Hernandez says no.
I wouldn't see it that way. I would see it more that it's a unified effort to try, whether it's early childhood or higher education, the significance is equal, right? So I think the view or how we are seeing this is not competing one another, but how do we do this where we can get through it in a way that all have a source of funding that we can live above water. I mean, we can't be competing. We have to work together. That is the essential direction that we have to move towards. And that's the way I see it. That's how we've been working lately. Yes.
Ginger Ostro, what's the mood of the people who are at those table meetings? And seeing what's happening nationally and still trying to keep the eyes on the prize?
I think you know, Lisa and Representative Hernandez said it well. Like, the need is here, the importance of education to ensuring the state's economy thrives, to ensuring every individual and family can thrive across the state. The importance is there. I think people recognize that, and it's about how do we come together to address these really crucial needs at a time when the importance is even more heightened. And that's, I think, the lens at which people are focused and really coming together to work on these important issues.
So what might help this legislation get over the finish line? The advocates say maybe you could. Lisa Castillo-Richmond says the public needs to be aware of the efforts to better fund the state colleges and universities, and they should make themselves heard.
We're starting to hear from more and more people across the state, students, families, you know, people working in different aspects of the education pipeline, as you mentioned earlier. So absolutely, we need Illinois residents and individuals to talk about why we should be investing in our higher education system, in our entire education system. In so many ways, the higher ed piece of this is the unfinished business of the incredible work that's been done in early childhood and K-12. And I think also, you know, when we, as Representative Hernandez said, like, we are not pitted against each other. If we don't have a good early childhood and K-12 system, students are not going to college. And so we need all of these systems to be aligned and funded properly and consistently excellent and accountable for that, so that we can make sure our students are able to persist into from cradle to career.
I would like to thank Lisa Castillo-Richmond of the Partnership for College Completion, State Representative Lisa Hernandez, and Ginger Ostro, Director of the Illinois Board of Higher Education, for participating in this discussion. And my sincere thanks to Ralph Martiri, the Director of the Center for Tax and Budget Accountability, for once again inviting me to participate in the symposium. To our listeners, if you'd like a copy of this program or just to hear it again, please visit our website. That's WBBMNewsRadio.com. There's a link on the homepage. You can also find our podcast on Odyssey.com. We'll be back next week with another edition of At Issue, and I hope you'll be listening. Until then, I'm Craig Delamore, News Radio 105.9 WBBM.
This episode is brought to you by Progressive. Most of you aren't just listening right now. You're driving, cleaning, and even exercising. But what if you could be saving money by switching to Progressive? Drivers who save by switching save nearly $750 on average, and auto customers qualify for an average of 7 discounts. Multitask right now. Quote today at Progressive.com. Progressive Casualty Insurance Company and Affiliates. National average 12-month savings of $744 by new customers surveyed who saved with Progressive between June 2022 and May 2023. Potential savings will vary. Discounts not available in all states and situations.
Today's podcast is sponsored by Midi Health. At any given time, 61% of adult women say they want to lose weight. But for many, that's easier said than done. If you've had trouble losing weight, don't lose hope. Midi Health uses a deep understanding of women's hormones and a combination of weight loss medications to create a customized plan for each user. Midi Health can help you achieve more effective and sustainable weight loss by addressing hormone imbalances. Midi can also prescribe proven weight loss medications that help you experience reduced appetite and increased feelings of fullness. When paired with hormone optimization, you're not just managing your weight, you're also supporting your body's natural processes, which means you can overcome those weight loss plateaus that in the past have been so difficult to move beyond. So if you're ready to combine the power of hormones with the power of weight loss medications, visit joinmidi.com today. Discover how this innovative approach can lead you to lasting success. That's joinmidi.com.
Can't get enough baseball? Start streaming MLB Network today. Get up to 15 out-of-market games a week live on any device, plus 24/7 access to MLB Network's award-winning shows, including live game look-ins and exclusive player interviews. And hear live radio play-by-play from all 30 clubs with MLB at Bat. Enjoy the home of baseball from virtually anywhere. Plans start as low as $5.99 per month. Sign up now at MLBNetwork.com/stream. Available in the U.S. only. Blackout restriction applies. Visit MLB.com/subscribe for full terms and conditions.
College holds a mythic place in American culture, but there are stories you won't hear on the campus tours.
The higher-ups are concerned about one thing, and that is avoiding scandal.
I'm Margot Gray. On the new podcast, Campus Files, we cover everything from rigged admissions to the drama of Greek life and student protests. Listen to and follow Campus Files, an Odyssey original podcast. Available now on the free Odyssey app and wherever you get your podcasts.